From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is the Chancellor's Report, featuring Mark Mone, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Here's your host, WUWM General Manager John Hess.
Welcome to UWM's Chancellor's Report. I'm your host, WUWM's General Manager John Hess. On today's Chancellor's Report, we'll continue our periodic look at issues of injustice and inequity. We'll talk with UWM's Chancellor Mark Mone and Dr. Joan Prince, Vice Chancellor, Global Inclusion and Engagement, about UWM's progress on addressing racial equality and social issues on campus, and how that Election Day, now that Election Day has passed, we'll assess how higher education will fare in this post-election environment. Mark and Joan, great to have you on the program today.
Delighted to be here, John. Thank you.
Great to be here.
So over the past several months, there's been an outpouring of millions of voices demanding justice and equity for Americans who are Black, Indigenous, and people of color. College campuses, including UW-Milwaukee, have been a focus of those demands. Looking at what's happened in these issues, and especially over what's happened over the past summer, can you share with us plans to address issues of racial and social inequities and refresh our memories on the drivers that are behind these choices?
You know, let me start on that one, and then Vice Chancellor Prince, who I'm delighted is able to join us again today, can add more detail and color in terms of some of the particulars in terms of how we're going down this path. Very much as you described, John, college campuses are where societal pressures, issues, tensions play out. And we know this last year has been a major one. There's a lot of forces that have come to the fore. And most notably, I think the pandemic has surfaced and really helped identify how unequal, how much disparity there is in terms of health, economic, a number of other elements. And then when you add in some of the police actions and some of the activities that have brought this to the fore, you really see the combustible forces that are at play. And we have had protests on our campus, as many campuses have. You tend to have an understanding about the need for that. And we consider this to be an important mechanism of free speech. We consider this to be something that is necessary. At the same time, while society is reckoning with current and past injustices, we too on our campus have taken this very seriously, have been engaged in a whole series of activities. I want to build on and recognize that we have had, over the past several decades, a lot of diversity, equity, inclusion components in place. And this has really been the leadership of Dr. Prince, who's put in place a lot of the specific programs, plans, and activities. To that background, we've added in the last year, another 7 or 8 different specific activities. And we've talked about some of those on past shows, but love to give you just a quick update on some of the great things that are underway in response with us recognizing we need and must do more for our campus to address our own systemic biases, issues, and things that we have an opportunity and frankly an obligation at the student level, at the employee level, and how we engage in the community. With that, Joan.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Chancellor and John. Good to be here with you as well. You know, we have talked about this before, and the Chancellor and I talk consistently about the fact that our programming, the way that we address things on our campus and working with our students, working with our faculty and staff, really isn't something new. We have done this over the years, many, many years. But what is different now that we feel is that we are so strategic and so intentional about ensuring that those that come through our doors as students, and particularly those that work there, that are there every day, the workplace, the environment, that we actually hold that mirror up to ourselves and say, where can we do better? What do we do that's great? And what do we do what are we not doing where there are gaps? And so what we said last time that I had the opportunity to be here was around different programming, different activities. And I will say, the Chancellor and I talk about this. We are so proud of how our campus, all facets of our campus have responded. One of the things I want to quickly comment on is the fact that the chancellor did take the bold step of requiring anti-bias training, anti-bias, anti-racist training for this campus. I'm happy to say the update is that we are about two steps from finalizing that curriculum. We plan to ask his executive cabinet and the deans, the top leadership, to go through that before the end of the year, and then to open that up to campus overall starting in January. So check mark, we're getting something done. The other thing that I would quickly comment on is we actually put money, and you know, in this day and age for higher ed, fiscal opportunities aren't what they used to be. But the chancellor was determined that he would set money aside so that we could address ways we could look internally and ask people, what are your thoughts and ideas for moving toward that anti-racist, anti-bias campus that we want it to be? Happy to report it out, awarded 10 grants around the work of that grant, immediate action. Their work has to be completed within the 12-month period. Quickly, two examples. The athletic department, a wonderful group came together, and their grant is called United We Roar, Athletes Against Anti-Racist Practices. So proud of them. So they're going to be working on things. We have another thing that's called Welcome, this radically changing institution, a radically welcoming institution for students. And students, along with a faculty member, came together to put that grant together. And that's going to be fabulous because it's going to be stories about their lived experiences and how we can learn from that. So I will say to that, check mark. So there are a number of things that we actually have completed, many more to go. Lots of overall training, development, but you know what? We're finally getting to the courageous conversations and those really difficult discussions that we believe truly are going to move us forward for that environment that we want to be.
Well, that is incredible. Thank you both for sharing that. Bravo to you. And I really look forward to working with you both on these initiatives.
Absolutely.
So, UW-Milwaukee has a history of change being driven by demonstrations. Can you talk to me a little bit about some of the notable examples of change and the demonstrations involving UW-Milwaukee over the past history that sort of is kind of helps us to lead up to the point of where we are now? And Joan, let's start with you.
Oh, happy to. Again, these are the kinds of discussions that the chancellor and I have. We have them before a crisis, we have them during a crisis, and we have them after a crisis. So one of the things that we do well, and it's part of our history, we host, as you know, we're part of a system, and we host our system on campus every June. We took the steps, and I'm trying to remember, Mark, it's not really important exactly when it was, but we actually build demonstration areas. So we don't stifle voices. We really believe in hearing voices on both sides of a dialogue. And over the years, we've had an opportunity for students to come into the protest area. They could hold up signs. They could provide literature for us to read. And I think that's important, particularly in that learning process of a student, to make sure that they understand civic dialogue and how to have those discussions. We actually talked to protesters on our campus. When the chancellor first came aboard, I remember clearly we had a student protest. I can't remember what that particular issue was, but the chancellor came out of Chapman Hall into the parking lot and had discussions with students. There was no violence. There was no raised voices because they were heard. So I would say we have a history of addressing student protests by asking for open discussion and dialogue, working with the head of our student association and other students on campus. Chancellor, I don't know if you have anything to build on that, but I for one, am really proud of how we handle those types of demonstrations, really promoting free speech.
You know, I couldn't agree with Vice Chancellor Prince more, and I would just add a little bit to that. If you can't have discourse in a peaceful, demonstrative way on a college campus, where can you have
where?
It? I think that's a really important part of the role that higher ed plays in a democracy, and I want to make sure we preserve that. I oftentimes get critics from the left and critics from the right who wonder why we promote this and why would you have that speaker? We had during the last presidential election, we had candidates from all different sides and people were vehement. We had 4,000 protesters for the Democratic debate that we had on our campus.
Right.
We had quite a few hundred when we had another candidate on our campus, the other party. So we had that history. And then what I want to point out is how, from an educational perspective, this is just another example of Joan's great work. Joan led a series, it was a year-long series on free speech, discourse, how to have civil dialogue in a really accessing support, and today that's evolved into our care, respect, and expression type of work. But how can campuses have that? So it's not something that just happens accidentally. It's got to be curated, cultivated, and really have an appreciation for how you can have that. So things do go extreme. That's something that's not always controllable. It's always high temperature issues, quite volatile. But it's important for us to continue to recognize that is something that is part of our place in society to continue to have that.
I understand that one of the initiatives underway is the commissioning of a new UWM history book talking about some of these issues. Chancellor, can you talk a little bit about that and what's going to be happening with that?
Well, I'd be happy to, and I really would bring in Dr. Prince to talk about some of the contents if we can. But let me tell you why I thought this book was so important for commissioning at this time in our history. We've had some wonderful history books about UWM over the years, but what we really haven't done is paid enough attention to the role, the incredibly important role that so many diverse stakeholders, constituents have played. It is part of our DNA, as I've said before. Diversity is a great strength. Why are we not showcasing? Why are we not celebrating? Why are we not historically documenting over the decades? So we think this is a really important opportunity because we've got some folks who were there at the ground floor that really helped build across at least 8, maybe more dimensions of diversity that we will be chronicling in a very powerful way to have the a lot of the founders, if you will, a lot of the people who can speak importantly to our history. And at the same time, set the stage for going forward, what is in front of us in a multi-pluralistic, heterogeneous environment that's so important for us to embrace and recognize these contributions and say, this is a big part of our future as well. We've only just scratched the surface in terms of what we can do. So with that, Joan, if you can speak to some of the core areas, and Joan has really been my partner in so many ways, not just on this book, but in so many other areas. And this book, we think, is going to be really one of our important highlights going forward over the next year.
Oh, sure. First of all, it's great to be able to publicly thank you, Mark. Thank the Chancellor for commissioning this book and for just being such a big advocate and on board to do this. This book is going to have 8 or 9 chapters, and the chapters are really going to focus on the role of diverse voices that have helped to build diversity, equity, and inclusion around the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And looking at some of our previous books, it wasn't that people were excluded, because I think the previous history books were very good and they do a very good detail. What was missing, though, was being able to hear from diverse voices telling the story of diversity in their voice. And that is what we are so excited about. We have chapters, as the Chancellor said, that are from individuals are co-authoring these chapters who actually had a role in building different things, such as the multicultural centers, such as the Veterans Center, thinking about ability. And how did we even become a campus, an institution that thought about and did something around ability? You know, those diverse characteristics that are often get left out, or people don't think to address them as well as they do. upfront characteristics such as race. Other identity centers around LGBTQ, we're just excited. The role international students, what about the diversity of international students? So while we couldn't address everything in the history book, what we're trying to do is to help people understand that wonderful mosaic, that umbrella of diversity that is UWM. Let's hear a little bit about it in the stories of those who actually were able to make some of those building blocks.
And if I didn't just echo one thing to reinforce what Dr. Prince just said, here's the results and why it's so important. You know, I oftentimes talk about when a month ago we attained for the fifth time, and I'm very proud of this on my watch, we have become a top 30 LGBTQ friendly university,
yes.
Not top 30%, but top 30 out of over 4,300 universities nationally. Think about that. It was not an accident. It was built on intentionality. And that's what this book really chronicles. How did we get there? What are the steps? Who did what? When? And at the same time, we're a veteran-friendly, military veteran-friendly university, twice as many veterans at UW-Milwaukee than any other campus in the state of Wisconsin, frankly, more
exactly.
than in a six-state region. Not accidental, deliberate intention.
No.
So here's this book that really tells the story of those areas. And so I'm really excited about it. And again, as always, Joan, thanks for our great partnership.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both. You know, one thing I do want to mention is we're just getting out of an election season and a contentious one at that.
Yes.
So, you know, what's the climate like here at on campus for students, and how is UWM helping advance civil discourse?
Joan, you want to start on that, or you want me to start? What's
sure.
your
I'm happy to,
there?
Happy to start on that. I actually am a little sad that we don't have all of our 24,000 students on campus this week or next week, because I keep thinking, what a great opportunity for teaching and for learning around something such as a national election, and how the election played, the steps that led up to it, the conversation, and what will happen now afterward, I think is a great teaching and learning moment. What we're going to do around this, though, is offer online hybrid discussions. We're very good at that. Just like we held the conversations and the dialogues around race over this summer, we had one specifically for faculty, one specifically for staff, one specifically for students. We're going to do that same thing around the election. And we're going to talk about civil discourse. How to move forward. What happens if your candidate doesn't win? Do you check in or do you check out? It's our role and responsibility as an institution of higher ed to not get into party issues, to be bipartisan, but our role really is to help students build their character, build how they operate when they leave us, and to leave us being the best globally diverse, understanding communicators and citizens that they can be. Mark?
You know, I wouldn't add a lot to that. Joan did such a great job really fleshing it out. And Joan has had a key role in really leading and having a finger on a lot of the cultural components per your question, John. I would add that I've never seen students more engaged when they have been here, working closely with our student association. They have really helped get the vote out. They've been engaged civically on a lot of different fronts. I do think that there is, I just checked as Joan was answering the question, I just checked the election results are still undecided as by the time this is aired, I imagine we'll know the answer. But it is that time of uncertainty and stress that does exist, just like in society. So the campus, again, is a microcosm of those dimensions as well. But the actions going forward that Vice Chancellor Prince has outlined are absolutely critical for us to, again, use this as an educational and, frankly, research moment. We've got great political
yes.
scientists. We've got economists. We've got social scientists, a number of others who really do add meaning, context, and understanding that we'll be studying this whole phenomenon for years.
Yes.
Really.
You know, you can't make this stuff up, right? This is reality. This is reality. What better place to learn in? And we're good at that.
Absolutely. And there'll be plenty to study from this election, I'm sure. So I want to switch back just for a second and talk a little bit about this, the Moonshot for Equity, because I want to just touch base on that. So first, explain what it is. And then also, why was UWM and the Milwaukee area the first to make this commitment regarding the Moonshot for Equity?
Happy to start on that one, John. You know, Moonshot for Equity, you may have heard about before. We've had both community leaders where we hosted a press conference for about 80 community leaders a couple of weeks ago. And then more recently, we had a national press conference. So we've really been getting the word out to talk about what is going on. But there's still quite a few thousands of folks who aren't aware, and we have to keep the word up. What Moonshot for Equity is about, in a nutshell, is it's a partnership with Educational Advisory Board. They're one of the leading organizations that provides strategic and consultative services and technology platforms for student success. And they have great experience with numerous campuses across the country. And we're borrowing and using, engaging with them on their 15 practices to eliminate the achievement gap. Let me just back up. Wisconsin, I've said many times before, has a notoriously bad place in the achievement gap. We're last in high school achievement gaps, and that continues oftentimes into college. And we need to close that gap. We need to have students, no matter what their background, underrepresented, majority, high, low income, it doesn't matter. All students that begin college deserve to finish. If we do not, you know, I'm going to talk, you're going to hear a little righteous indignation here. If we accept students and they start and they do not complete, they get saddled with debt. They have put themselves out of the workforce advancement. There's been a number of things that happen. So we really owe it to every student who starts at UWM, and frankly, for any college, to take that mantle of responsibility seriously, to see through to finish. It's not just time to graduation, it's time to paycheck. And we've got to be serious about that in a very different way. So these action items that are part of the Moonshot are critically important. And I'm proud to say that we've joined UW Parkside, Carthage College, and Milwaukee Area Technical College in this regional effort. There were going to be two other regions that were going to join us. They decided, because of the pandemic, that they were too distracted. They didn't have the resources. They thought the time was not right. In contrast, we said the time could never be more important, given what we talked about earlier in this interview. The disparities that exist in society need to be closed, and the path to prosperity is absolutely through education. And I'm telling you, this is a commitment that I have and our entire campus leadership. We're on board fully behind this. So in a word, it's about courage. It's about farsightedness and major commitment to really see this one through. It's a bold goal over the next 10 years to completely eliminate, not just close, not just narrow, but eliminate. We want every student who starts at UWM to finish. And this is a huge extension of the work that you've been hearing about around diversity, equity, and inclusion, because it embraces all. It's about inclusivity. Joan?
I can put an exclamation point after that. I think you detailed it well, Chancellor, and the passion. I will say this. It is about being strategic and intentional, obviously, in addressing that gap, that equity gap of achievement in education. But for me, any institution could eventually work on that and make that happen. What we have that will complete this and actually be able to put a check mark like we do at the end of a project is that it's strategic, it's intentional, and there has to be a plan to continue it past those like me, who's an executive sponsor, past the time that the chancellor might decide not to be our chancellor anymore. It's about being strategic, intentional, and understanding and having the compassion to make it happen. So that's why I'm really excited about Moonshot. And we can't do it without the help of all of those who are listening.
I know as part of the Moonshot project, there's something called the Georgia State Example. Can you explain that a little bit and how it applies to UWM?
Absolutely. So we've been fortunate to have great relationships with Georgia State, which has been probably one of the best exemplars in the country for having a situation much like where we were 10, 12 years ago, kind of in the middle of the pack from a retention and graduation perspective, having an access mission as well as a research mission to serve all individuals. And they had problems with the retention and graduation, and they systematically developed strategies, used technology, developed particular practices that enabled them, working in collaboration with EAB, Education Advisory Board. And so we are modeling on that. We've had Tim Rennick, who's one of their senior leaders, come onto our campus. We've captured him on video. We've had a number of workshops that build around the kinds of practices. And there's other universities that have been very successful as well. But they are what we call one of our urban peer institutions. They really are comparable to us in a number of different ways. The types of areas they've made investments, the types of things that they've done on the advisory front, the use of technology, putting the answers into faculty, student, and advisors' hands on a common platform, and really been relentless about this. It really is about the culture as well as the strategy and technology. So that's the Georgia State example that we're borrowing liberally from, stealing if we need to, but in this case, we're paying for it. So no theft.
Well, and speaking of paying for it, you're going to be putting some money behind this initiative as well.
We put dollars into it because we, across the entire UW system, have put what we call the Navigate, EAB's Navigate for Student Success plan into place. We got it at a great discount by leading the system and ultimately having the system buy, so we got some great economies. We're adding some additional pieces to that for additional support. But I have to tell you, EAB has put $25 million into this initiative nationally. So they're giving us technology support, consultation, and great strategic partnering on this. So they've got skin in the game. We've got skin in the game. And I'll tell you, the delta for us was not that great compared to other institutions that haven't even started down this path. But it's a great investment, and it's necessary because our students, faculty, and larger community do deserve this type of success for all.
That's great. Joan, do you have anything else to add to this?
Not really. It's all about strategic cultural change, bottom line.
Well, this has been a great discussion, and I'm sure that in future programs, we're going to talk more about all of these issues in more detail, but this has been a great addition to our already the ongoing series that we've been doing on this program. So our guests today on the UWM Chancellor's Report have been Mark Monet, Chancellor at UW-Milwaukee, and Joan Prince, Vice Chancellor, Global Inclusion and Engagement. Mark and Joan, as always, I want to thank you both for joining me and joining us today. I'm WUWM's General Manager, John Hess, and I thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, John.
Thank you so much, John.
You've been listening to The Chancellor's Report, featuring Mark Monet, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. If you'd like more information, go to uwm.edu/chancellor.